takisi mundo che kane chi ne ane achi kan la ye de ba me ba rang ngong ne tu ba ri yo ma re s rang ngong ne tu pe tong ba re s rang ngong ne tu pe ki tong ba yin na ya ane shen che re ane ta gi me ba re be s ne me ba ma re s yo ba yo re s ane kane yo re s ne shen chi le tue ne tu yo re s chi na che kane chi ne ya shen chi le tue ne tu ba re s ne kan la ye de ba me ba rang ngong ne tu ba de yo ma re s chi na de ne ki Denjin, 탈바다 탐지 기부고고 되는 게 도고고래 해서 도발 지고고래 해서지 어디네 거네 쉬와 되네 쉬냐 저기다 직군어 자주 샘지 군에 나와제 샘지 탐지 전달아 산요고바 도발지 이인 삼지 대 산요고바 도발아 되네 내 남념된 지네 도고 인자 아니 녀모바 방고 인자 안디 빠야게 녀보티 아니 돈이 되비셔라 다 파신 두기 녀면 제대로 진바 주든 세워 주든 삼네 셔라
Good evening, everyone. So last week, we continued to look at this text, Praise for Dependence Arising. And in here we saw how all phenomena, whether outer or inner phenomena, all phenomena that appear to us, they, whilst appearing to exist inherently, or appearing as if they are independent, not dependent on anything at all. This is not how they exist. Rather, they are empty of inherent existence. So if a phenomenon then is empty of inherent existence, does this mean that it's a non-existent, it doesn't exist at all? We also looked at that, and we saw that if something lacks inherent existence, that doesn't mean it is non-existent. Rather, it exists but in dependence on something other than itself. One thing independent on another. So therefore, no phenomenon exists inherently, but rather phenomena exist dependently, or dependent arising. So that's what we've been looking at, and where this is of a particular relevance and how we should be incorporating it in our meditation is that the root cause of all our suffering is the ignorance, the mind that is the ignorance of self-grasping. And it's from this very root cause that all our afflicted minds, all our deluded emotions arise. And from this we accumulate causes for further suffering and remaining bound within cyclic existence. And moreover, through this understanding, then we apply it here, because it's through meditating on dependence arising that we are able to eliminate this root cause of all our suffering, this ignorance of self-grasping. And if we, when we are successful in eliminating the root cause of suffering, no further suffering can be experienced because the cause is eliminated. And that means one attains liberation from suffering, liberation from cyclic existence. And in one's meditation then, if one first cultivates a bodhicitta, this motivation that's set, that this mind that is motivated to attain enlightenment for the sake of others, when this is generated, one then engages in the meditations and the practices of a bodhisattva, which include the perfection of wisdom. And the way then we are encouraged to engage in the cultivation of wisdom is to cultivate this wisdom understanding emptiness through the technique of dependent arising, this technique that we've been looking at.
During the
So we've been hearing then that no phenomenon exists inherently. If one investigates and looks for a phenomenon to see if it exists in the way that it appears, if it exists inherently, we'll see it has no inherent existence. Rather, it arises in dependence. So it is a dependence arising. What does it arise in dependence on? Dependence on causes and conditions. So we'll continue to look at that then tonight, as well as Lama Tsongkhapa J. Rinpoche's reaction to this wondrous teaching of dependent arising that Buddha Shakyamuni gave. So this is where we'll start and continue with the presentation tonight. This is the 20th verse, that all things are empty of essence, and from this arises that result, are two certainties that do not contradict, but mutually complement. Look at the first verse, that all things are empty of essence. The first line, that all things are empty of essence. Empty of essence, here essence then would be a synonym for the inherent existence or true existence. And the meaning then is, as we've been hearing, that all phenomena, or every single existence, everything that exists, whether it's an arsa or inner phenomenon, it is empty of inherent existence or empty of self-existence. And what then does self-existence mean, or if something were to exist by way of its own essence or its own inherent nature, what would that mean? So if something were self-existent, then it would possess two characteristics. It would firstly be independent. In other words, it wouldn't be dependent on anything else. It would be independent. And then secondly, it would be unchanging. It would never change. So those would be the two characteristics of something if something were to exist inherently or by way of its own essence or self-existence, then it would be independent and unchanging. And then if we were to see on the first line that all things are empty of essence, so this means they are empty of existing inherently or empty of their own self-existence. And the mind then that investigates and come to realize that the phenomenon that is being investigated is empty of its own essence or empty of its self-existence, that is the wisdom realizing emptiness.
Gyu
And the second line, from this arises that result. Yeah, the meaning of this, the second line then, is that all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. And not only are they empty of inherent existence, but they arise independent on causes and conditions. So again, if something were inherently existent, or a synonym, existed by way of its own essence, or existed by way of its own self-existence, then such a phenomenon would have those two characteristics that were just mentioned. It would be independent and unchanging. Being independent would mean that it's not dependent on causes and conditions. So what we're hearing here then is that all phenomena are empty of inherent existence, which means they must be dependent. And what are they dependent on? What we're seeing here in the second line, dependent on causes and conditions. From this arises that result. So all impermanent phenomena, or all compounded phenomena, or another synonym, all functioning things. So all of these impermanent phenomena, none of them, not a single one, exists by way of its own nature or is independent. Rather, they are dependent. All impermanent phenomena are dependent on causes and conditions. And that's the meaning of the second line. Now we take an illustration that's easy to understand. So we look at our physical aggregates, our body. So if our body were inherently existent, or existed by its own essence, or were self-existent, then it would have those two characteristics we've just heard about. It would be independent, so not affected by anything else, not needing to rely on anything else, and it would be unchanging. So if that were the case, then this body, if it would be unchanging from birth to now, would have never changed. And that, of course, is not the case. Likewise, all the various causes and conditions that have led to change, these actually would never have been able to have an impact on our body if it were inherently existent. So food and nutritious food, or even poisonous food, would have no impact on this body and never would have. Care from others would have no impact on this body. This body wouldn't be reliant on the care of others, on nourishment, on clothing, etc. That would be the case if this body were self-existent, or inherently existent, or existed by way of its own essence, or truly existent. But that's not the case. We know that this body is dependent. Therefore, it's a dependent arising, dependent on various causes and conditions, such as food, such as care from others, etc. So this shows then that our body is not independent, but dependent. Dependent on causes and conditions. And therefore, it doesn't exist by way of its own essence, but it's empty of self-existence, or empty of existing by way of its own essence. Rather, it is something that changes, not unchanging, and it's something that is dependent, not something that is independent. So therefore, taking this an example, this impermanent phenomenon, or this compounded phenomenon that is our body, this is something that has, we can say, has two characteristics. Firstly, it is empty of inherent existence, and secondly, it is dependent on causes and conditions, and has both of these characteristics. Okay, the next two lines, the final two lines in the verse, are two certainties that do not contradict but mutually complement. What are these two certainties? So this refers then to two minds. The mind that understands the lack of inherent existence, or that realizes the lack of inherent existence, that's the first. And the second is the mind that realizes or understands dependent arising. So these are the two certainties, these two minds. And so these two minds then, they do not contradict each other, but mutually complement each other. So in other words, the wisdom realizing emptiness, the wisdom realizing dependence arising, these two minds, they don't hinder each other. Rather, they support each other.
rāngshīng mācūpa sāṁdāngbī tōng rāngshīng mācūpa āgū lō dīgī tēngjīng trāvā chūngā yīmbā dīlā pāntō gu tūs tēngjīng trāvā chūngā pūngbō dī tēngjīng trāvā chūngā yīmbā dī yāgā āgū tūgū tūs dāng pūngbō tēngjīng trāvā chūngā āgū lō dīgī pūngbō rāngshīng mācūpa tōpa lō dīlā pēngu tūs nīgumī tūs nīgī pāntō gu tūs rōba chīgī tūs yōrā
Get these last two lines in a little more detail. So the two certainties do not contradict, but mutually complement each other. So this then, to understand these two lines well, we need to think or remind ourselves of the view of the non-prasangika Buddhists. So remembering that the Buddha taught varying philosophical views in accordance with the needs of various students. So the highest view is that of the Prasangika. But the non-Prasangika, they have a problem when it comes to asserting the view of dependent arising and the view of the lack of inherent existence onto a single basis. In other words, onto a single object, onto a single phenomenon. And this verse, these two lines here, refers to the problem that non-Prasangikas have in understanding how these two views, that of dependent arising and emptiness, can be posited or placed onto a single basis, onto a single object. And this is because for them, if something is a dependent arising, it has to arise. If it's a dependent arising, it exists. And if something exists, it has to exist by way of its own nature, its own essence, and therefore cannot be inherently existent. Sorry, it cannot be empty of inherent existence. Rather, it is inherently existent. So what these lower Buddhist schools believe is that if a phenomenon, such as one's physical aggregate, is a dependent arising, then it arises in dependence on causes and conditions. So it exists, and so therefore they have a view of dependent arising, but because this phenomenon exists, they believe it has its own self-nature, its own self-existence, and therefore they cannot say that this dependent arising phenomenon is empty of inherent existence. There they have a contradiction, so they are unable to posit dependent arising and emptiness onto a single object. And the same is true for the opposite. If they investigate a phenomenon to see if it exists inherently, and they come to the view that it's empty of existing inherently, for them, that phenomenon is a non-existent. It doesn't exist at all because it has no self-nature. And if it doesn't exist, it can't be a dependent arising because it doesn't exist. So that there again, they can't posit emptiness of inherent existence and dependence arising on one basis. Because if something is empty of inherent existence, it cannot be a dependence arising because it doesn't exist. So they cannot posit both emptiness as well as dependence arising onto a single phenomenon. So that is the problem with the lower Buddhist tenets, the lower Buddhist philosophical schools. For the highest philosophical school, the Prasangika, they don't have this problem. So for them, the two certainties do not contradict but mutually complement, because on the basis of a single object, they investigate, does this object exist by way of its own nature? They investigate and they see it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist by way of its own nature. It's empty of existing by way of its own nature. So there's a realization of emptiness. But for them, for Prasangika, this doesn't mean the object is a non-existent, because if something is empty of its own nature, it can still exist as a dependent arising. So for them, for Prasangikas, there is no contradiction. On a single basis, on a single phenomenon, both dependent arising and emptiness of inherent existence can be posited. And likewise, the converse is true too. If they investigate a phenomenon and they see that it is a dependent arising, say the aggregates, the form aggregates, it arises in dependence on causes and conditions, But it doesn't exist by way of its own nature. It's not inherently existent. Because if it were inherently existent, it would be independent. But it is not independent, rather it is dependent, a dependent arising. So therefore, a prasangika on one basis can posit both dependent arising and emptiness. And moreover, for the yogi who holds the prasangika view, when they realize emptiness and they realize that a phenomenon doesn't exist inherently, that same mind, that same wisdom, helps their realization that that phenomenon is a dependent arising. It exists in dependence on causes and conditions or on imputation. So therefore, the one wisdom aids the other, assists the other. And likewise, if the meditation is done in the opposite direction, they see that a phenomenon may appear to exist inherently, and they investigate, and they find there's no inherently existent phenomenon, it is empty of inherent existence, yet it is still a dependent arising. It depends on imputation or on causes and conditions. Here again, the wisdom that realized emptiness, this aids or assists the wisdom realizing dependent arising. So therefore, unlike the lower philosophical tenets, prasangikas are able to realize both dependent arising and emptiness on a single basis. And therefore, for them, dependent arising and emptiness have no contradiction, but they exist in harmony. So I think it's quite possible that all that's been said perhaps is not that clear. Some of it has been said in previous weekends, but you may be then thinking, hang on, how do these two wisdoms aid each other? How does one benefit the other? How does the wisdom realizing emptiness benefit the wisdom realizing dependence arising, and vice versa?
Rashi Madhu, Pumba Rashi Madhu, Topulodi, never tend to go, as I
If we look at our aggregates, and if we investigate our aggregates and to see if they exist in the way that they appear, and we see if they exist inherently, which would mean if our aggregates exist inherently, they would be unchanging and not dependent, or they would be independent. So if we investigate our aggregates in the way that we've mentioned in previous weeks, we'll come to see that our aggregates do not exist inherently at all. We can't find even the slightest trace of inherent existence at all. When we engage in this meditation, we come to realize that our aggregates do not exist inherently. They are empty of inherent existence. And then all that it would appear is emptiness. And here we have a realization of emptiness. And the mind that realizes emptiness here is called the wisdom realizing emptiness. And then immediately, once we've given rise to this wisdom realizing emptiness, then knowing now that the aggregates are empty of inherent existence, or to use a synonym, empty of being independent, we know they are dependent. They are dependent on causes, on conditions, and imputation by mind. So immediately, this wisdom that realized that the aggregates are empty of inherent existence, that wisdom then realizes, that it's empty of inherent existence, and it's a dependent arising, dependent on causes and conditions, dependent on imputation. So here, you have the wisdom realizing emptiness, complementing or aiding or assisting the wisdom realizing dependent arising. The first realization induces and aids the second. And the same is true for doing the same meditation, but in the opposite direction, where one investigates the aggregates, coming to investigate whether the aggregates are inherently existent, but not through looking for inherent existence, but rather looking to see if there are dependent arisings. Because if the aggregates were inherently existent, they would be independent and unchanging. But through investigating the wide variety of causes that lead to the arisal of the aggregates, both coarse as well as subtle causes, doing this repeatedly over a sustained period so that the understanding arises in a profound way, we come to see clearly that these aggregates are dependent arisings. They are not independent, but dependent, dependent on a wide array of both coarse and subtle causes and conditions. And then we have a wisdom realizing dependent arising. And immediately this wisdom then realizes, so these aggregates are dependent. They are not independent. Not being non-independent, they are therefore empty of inherent existence. Because if they were inherently existent, they would be independent. But now I've realized they are dependent. So here we have the wisdom that has realized dependent arising, complementing, aiding or assisting the arisal of the wisdom realizing emptiness. So in this way, the wisdom realizing dependent arising assists the wisdom realizing emptiness, and conversely, the wisdom realizing emptiness, this aids the wisdom realizing dependent arising. The illustration just given, we are speaking about the aggregates. But the same analysis should be applied to all phenomena, everything that exists. And we will see that every single existence is empty of inherent existence. Nothing exists inherently. And each and every phenomenon that exists is a dependent arising. It depends one thing independent on another. And engaging in this meditation repeatedly over a sustained period on a wide variety of objects, certainty will arise in our mind. As you see on the third line, certainty, or we can say being definite, being definite or being certain. So this arises within in our mind about the certainty of the presentation of dependent arising and the presentation of emptiness. And then this too aids the certainty that we have about the law of cause and effect, or the law of karma, because we see how results arise in dependence on causes, how causes lead to results. Because this is the very essence of when we're discussing that phenomena are dependent arisings, and in particular impermanent phenomena are dependent on causes and conditions. When we come to realize this in a profound way, this means our faith in the law of karma, this arises in a very powerful and stable manner. What we've been hearing now in these last few segments is a unique view of the Prasangika. Prasangika, or the highest Buddhist philosophical tenets, are alone in asserting that every phenomenon that exists exists both whilst being empty of inherent existence as well as being a dependent arising, dependent one thing on another or dependent on causes and conditions. It's only the Prasangika who are able to assert both dependent arising and the lack of inherent existence onto a single basis. This is a unique view of the Prasangika. The author of the text we're studying, Lama Tsongkhapa Jerenpuche, the advice that he's giving to us here in this verse is now that we're hearing about the harmony of dependence and dependence arising and emptiness that is unique to the Prasangika. This is something that we need to take to heart. We need to hear this, reflect on this, and apply it in our meditations and thereby into how we live our lives. Because what we are hearing here is a teaching that is unique from the Buddha. The Buddha is alone in having taught this method that is able to completely eradicate all our destructive emotions, all our afflicted minds. This is the very method that can lead, that by which we can develop ourselves to attain the state of liberation, the state where we are liberated from suffering, liberated from samsara. And this is because in order to overcome our afflicted minds, which has at the root cause ignorance, one needs to develop the contrary mind, the opposing mind, the opposite mind. And the opposite to ignorance is wisdom. And how to develop this wisdom? It's as we've been hearing in this verse, meditating on both the wisdom realizing emptiness as well as the wisdom realizing dependence arising. And in this verse, we see how to meditate on the two, how the one complements or the one aids the other. Through meditating on first on emptiness, this then serves to aid our meditation on dependence arising. And vice versa, through first meditating on dependence arising, this then serves to aid our meditation on emptiness of inherent existence. And this technique, Buddha Shakyamuni taught it, and he taught it from his own experience. This was the very technique he practiced to eliminate all the afflicted minds within his own continuum. So ourselves as being beings who want to experience only happiness and to be freed of suffering, if we generate the motivation of love and compassion, and we combine this with this meditation on emptiness and dependent arising, where we are skillfully meditating on the two so that they complement each other, we will then be able to attain perfect Buddhahood ourselves. And now that we have received this teaching and we have this wisdom in our hands, it would be a great loss not to utilize this knowledge, but rather we should take this rare and precious opportunity that we have and come to understand this topic in a deep way, both hearing and studying these teachings, as well as reflecting and meditating on them. If we were to encounter someone who was actually starving, someone who was perhaps facing death due to starvation, then of course compassion would arise within us for this person, and we would immediately either prepare some food for them or get something that would be nutritious for them to eat, so that we could save this person's life. But if we were to bring them nutritious and perhaps tasty food, and this person, although facing death, if they showed no interest in eating this food, they almost certainly would die, and this would be a great loss for them. So similarly, we ourselves, as beings who want to only experience happiness, who want lasting, stable happiness without any problems or difficulties in our lives, but yet our lives, though, we do encounter problem and difficulty one after the other, and often it feels like many at the same time. We experience so much physical and mental pain and difficulty if we don't take this opportunity that we have now, this opportunity to cultivate and develop this technique to freedom from suffering. That would be a loss comparable to someone who presented with a nutritious meal that could save their life, instead turns their back on it or ignores it. Hearing this then, perhaps the wish to engage in such meditation will arise. So let's then look at how to investigate dependence arising, as well as emptiness.
What
we've been hearing thus far, this is a teaching from the Buddha himself. And only the Buddha who taught that all phenomena, everything that exists, is both empty of inherent existence and a dependent arising. And that this knowledge is not just something for mere intellectual pursuit, but when one comes to realize this in a profound way, one attains liberation from suffering, freedom from suffering. Reflecting on this then, great faith should arise in the Buddha through appreciation for his kindness in teaching us this path to liberation, this technique that leads to freedom from suffering. The meditation starts out with that point because that serves to generate great strength in our mind and the aspiration to strive and make efforts in the meditation. So having generated this strength of mind, we then start with the object that we're going to investigate. And one usually will start with one's own physical and mental aggregates, because it's on this basis that we experience suffering. So whilst we may experience the rise of compassion for the suffering that others experience, we don't experience the suffering that others have. So it's on the basis of our own physical and mental aggregates that we experience suffering. So this is where we should start.
And Yun马达维呢，地里头是没什么力嘛嘞，实际上南方人就考虑给同样，缺的了，宁波没吧？Yun蒙古大火嘞，实际上Yun蒙古通常对，哎呢，人刚才提了，他对Yun提了，他提了的，他古都是没，他对个什么的力给热起来。
Now, so the first step of the meditation was to generate a mind of faith, to give strength to us at the start of meditation, to give us mental strength. Now, the second step is we start to investigate the nature of our aggregates, so our physical and mental aggregates. So these have come about. So we're starting here because this is where we experience suffering, physical and mental suffering. We experience on the basis of our physical body and our minds. And we need to then come to, and the point that we are investigating here is to see that as long as we have these aggregates that have come about in dependence on contaminated karma, so that are a result of causes which are contaminated, we will continue to experience suffering. As long as we have a body or these minds that have come about in dependence on contaminated karma, we have this basis that experiences suffering, and we will continue to suffer, both physically and mentally. And this meditation then, we need to look at the variety of suffering that we experience, physical and mental suffering that we experience. We need to do so both on a coarse level, but in particular on a subtle level. Because the goal we're trying to come to in the second part of the meditation, in the second step, is to see how these aggregates are pervaded by suffering in the sense that as long as we have them, we have the basis upon which we will suffer. And we need to meditate to the point where we generate a sincere wish to be liberated from aggregates that have physical, mental aggregates that have come about due to contaminated karma. And this then again gives great strength to the mind. This wish to be liberated from the causes of suffering, this gives great strength to our mind. So this, in brief, the second step of the motivation is looking at suffering and the causes of suffering in relation to our aggregates. So that second step of the meditation, this is primarily looking at suffering, the truth of suffering. The second step then is looking then at the origin of our suffering aggregates. So here we start this third step of the meditation now, having given rise to the strong wish to be free of suffering. And this wish to be free of suffering has come about through investigating the physical and mental suffering that we experience, not just on a coarse level but subtler levels. And now we think about, so what are the causes for us having this basis of suffering, physical and mental aggregates that are the basis of our suffering? This has come about due to contaminated karma that we ourselves accumulated in past lives due to our own afflicted minds, our own destructive emotions. That is the cause that has led to the result of these aggregates which are the basis of our suffering. So the cause of the contaminated karma was the afflicted minds. The cause of the afflicted minds is the ignorance of self-grasping. So the root cause of all our suffering is this ignorance of self-grasping, and from this results all our other afflicted minds, such as anger and attachment and pride and jealousy, and these lead to the accumulation of contaminated karma, which lead to the result of these contaminated physical and mental aggregates. So this then is the third step in the meditation. Now we come to the fourth step in the meditation. Here we've come to identify that these aggregates that are the basis for our suffering, our physical mental aggregates, they are a result that have come from a cause which is contaminated karma that we accumulated ourselves in a past life. And that itself, that contaminated karma, came from a cause which would have been our various afflicted minds, which they themselves came from a cause, the ignorance of self-grasping. So now we have seen this sequence, and with our understanding of cause and effect, we know that if the cause is eliminated, then no such result can be experienced. So in other words, if this root cause of all our afflicted minds that leads to our contaminated karma, which leads to a contaminated aggregates, if that is eliminated, that cause is eliminated, there will be no such further results. So now we, in this fourth step, we think, so how can we eliminate this root cause, this ignorance of self-grasping? Then if you summon Gosam, you know, Dreya Chikya, the Rinpo, Gongyabke Rinpo Mumma, the Anki Tagia, the Anki Shika, Shipa, then Anki Shipa de, Nato Daxi Marikpa de, maybe so Tukire. The Shipa, then the young Danta Sumye de, young Shipa de, Yamanadi, the Dina
Jawa, that Shipa, and the Jawa.
The young Shipa,
the Dina
Jawa, Gosam. So the fourth step of the meditation is then, is it possible to eliminate this, the ignorance of self-grasping? So sorry, I said how before, but it's really, is it possible to do so? So within, now we're continuing within this fourth step of the meditation. So here we start to look at the arisal of our afflicted minds or our destructive emotions. So we take one such as anger. And in the meditation we recall a situation where we are angry. Let me think of an actual situation when we got angry or annoyed or frustrated. And it would have come because someone spoke to us in a way that we didn't like, or they spoke to someone we care about in a way we didn't like, we find offensive. Or they perhaps broke one of our possessions or stole one of our possessions. And so from that, we got angry because they spoke to me like this. They spoke to my friend like this. Or they harmed my possession. Then we think of a situation where actual attachment arose within us. And we'll see that this mind of attachment comes from a wish of, I want. I need this for my happiness. So here we take two illustrations of two different afflicted minds, anger and attachment, and we think of actual situations where those have arisen, and we see that they have this close relationship with our own desires, our own wishes. I don't want. I'm averse to this. I do want. I desire this. We see this relationship between our own wishes and the arisal of the minds of attachment and anger. Considering then in the fourth step of the meditation, so this previous segment where we were recalling a situation where we got angry and we recall a situation where attachment arose, the purpose of that wasn't to get distracted by our memories, but to see this relationship between our wishes, between the I and the resulting affliction. So to see how from I want comes the attachment, I don't want is the anger. So then we go a little deeper in the meditation, and now we try to get a sense for how the I, the self, appears to ourselves. Because there is an I, we are sitting here, we are reflecting. Right now we are listening to a talk. So there is an I that we talk about. So when we think of ourselves, what appears to our mind? Is it something that is associated with our aggregates? So our physical aggregates, like our physical aggregates, such as which is our body, or our mental aggregates, our minds? Or is it something completely separate from the body and the mind? So this is now how we're starting to try and get a feel for how our sense of self or our I appears to us. Still within the fourth step of the meditation here, we're now coming to try and get a feel for how the self appears to us, or how our sense of I or our sense of self appears to us. And so this then, as we heard earlier, is right at the start of the talk, how phenomena appear as if they are inherently existent, which means they appear to be independent, they appear to be unchanging. So the sense of self we have appears to be independent and unchanging. And then we have a mind that believes this. It's called a mind that would grasp at this, or a mind that believes this, that accepts that this is how the I exists. And this then is the ignorance of self-grasping. It's a mind, which in this case is an ignorance, which grasps at the self. It's an ignorance that grasps or believes at the self as existing in the way that it appears, as existing inherently, or in a way that's independent, unchanging. And this ignorance of self-grasping, this is that root cause of all our afflictions. Continuing in the fourth part of this meditation, so we've first, through looking at recalling times of anger and attachment to see the relationship with the I, we now come to the point of seeing where, and then we went, sorry, from there we looked at how the I then does appear to us, our sense of self appears to our mind, and now we start to investigate, to look for the self. Because if the self exists in the way that it appears, which is independent of anything outside of itself, not dependent on causes or other minds or anything, this should be findable. So we now start the investigation to look for this. And so the first place we look for this sense of self, this I, is what we're most familiar with, my body. So we mentally start to search through our body, looking for the sense of I. We look through the various body parts, and we mentally divide up our body and place a part there, say an arm, and we think, so is that the arm? It, within that arm, is that where my I resides? And of course not. That's that would be called my arm, not I. And likewise, if we look within the body to the various organs or the blood within the body, this none of these parts could be called the I. And then if we look throughout the body, and we're quite comfortable that this body is not our sense of our I, or what we consider our sense of I, then if it's not in the body, there's only one other place to look, and that's the mind, because other than the body or the mind, where else could one find the self? So then we start to look at our various individual minds. So let's take the minds of feelings, such as when we are feeling happy. Is that the sense of I? Well, if the mind that is the feeling of happiness or pleasure was the sense of I, and the sense of I is always there, then this feeling of happiness or pleasure would also always be present. But we know from our own experience we are not always happy. And sometimes we are quite miserable. So is this mind, this feeling of being miserable or of suffering, is this our I? And thankfully not, because we are not always miserable, we are also sometimes quite happy. So if we look like this and we see in our individual minds, we can't find this sense of I, this I that is independent and unchanging. And then we need to take this meditation, because these meditations need to be done repeatedly over a sustained period, and as we gain greater familiarity, that we'll be able to go to subtler levels with our meditation, and certainly in terms of looking at our various minds. And eventually we come down to our subtlest mind. We may think that we have a very subtle mind that is ever present, and that then must be the sense, must be our I. That must be where our self resides. But even if you look at our subtlest mind, this has parts. This has moments. It has a moment, a part that existed a moment ago. That's not our I, because that has passed, and it's not that I is now non-existent. We're sitting here meditating. And what about the subtlest mind that has the part which is the moment about to come? That cannot be the I, because that hasn't come yet, but there is a person sitting, an I sitting here meditating. And what about this very present moment? Is that the I? Well, if we look for a present moment of consciousness, no matter how subtle, this can always be further subdivided into a past and future moment. We can keep subdividing further and further and further, never finding what is an indivisible present moment of consciousness. At that point, seeing we can't find an independent or inherently existent or self-existent I anywhere, not in our body or any of our minds, we realize emptiness. We realize that we are empty, or the I is empty of inherent existence. And the mind that realizes that the I is empty of existing inherently is the wisdom realizing emptiness. This wisdom that is realizing emptiness, the emptiness of inherent existence, this mind then knows that the ignorance of self-grasping is a wrong consciousness. This ignorance that grasps at the self as existing independently, that ignorance is a wrong consciousness. And now to think back to where we started with this fourth point of the meditation, we now know that this ignorance can be abandoned. Because the first step of this fourth step of the meditation was, is it possible to eliminate the ignorance of self-grasping? And now we've seen that it is.
Ngadi 就是说，你这个，碰破就累怕，碰破了电的大把子的月把的，就是大把子的月把他糊涂过来是，就是说，今天人家，加把钱呢，东西好过的，这个外地电钱只要就累怕，碰破了电的大把子也蛮好糊涂过来是。
Now, in this meditation, we've come to see that the ignorance of self-grasping is a wrong consciousness. This ignorance that believes that the self exists in the way that it appears that it exists inherently or independently, this is a wrong consciousness. And so then, how can one say then that the self does exist? Because what we've seen thus far is that the self doesn't exist in the way that it appears. But it doesn't mean that the self is completely non-existent. That would be a nihilistic view. Rather, the self is imputed by mind. Therefore, the self is dependent on imputation by mind. Self is a dependent arising, dependent by on imputation by mind. And onto what? A basis, which is the collection of the physical and mental aggregates. So onto this basis, that is a collection of the aggregates, mind imputes self. So here what we have, all these steps in this meditation, we've came to the point where we cultivated a wisdom that realized that the self is empty of inherent existence, that then induced the wisdom of dependence arising, realizing that the self is a mere imputation, that the self is merely imputed by mind onto the basis that is the aggregates. So in this way, we have the union of emptiness and dependence arising, or the harmony of emptiness and dependence arising.
All right, I'm also dealing with love sending you in the area that the names are also some died at Tambo.
That brings us to the end of the class. And tonight, you know, we went through some detail, hopefully a little clearly, about how to engage in a meditation on the harmony of dependence arising and emptiness, starting out by generating strength of mind through faith and conviction, and then through investigating the faults of samsara, and then thirdly, the cause of our suffering, that is the ignorance of self-grasping, and then fourthly, the main body of the meditation is first seeing how the self appears, and then looking for the self, looking for it in the physical aggregates and the mental aggregates. And then lastly, in the meditation, using this wisdom that has realized emptiness, we induce the wisdom realizing dependent arising. So that's what we've looked at then tonight.
And then, tempa sho ta yam ji ku tempa ina zamle na la ya mi dung yul mang bol ya phan do ya chim bu yong pi yong go le tene na ta yam ji ku te ya pe ma si ji chim bu le sha tene sa sem jian tham ji ge dwan da le ya ane sem jian tham ji ge dwan da le ane dung ma se ya den di ji du ya dwan da le ya ane yam ji ku tempa sho sam ji tene nga zu ge me ba ze chi du che che ma zu sha sa me ni chang go me ni chim yam de 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 sha na
As you may well have read in the news, His Holiness has been admitted to hospital with a chest infection. So Lama Zopa has requested that the PMT centers do puja for His Holiness, and I believe we're doing that on Sunday afternoon. But in addition to that advice from Lama Zopa, then the Ganden Tripa, the senior Lama within the Gelug tradition, he has given a vast number of practices to the monks in the three great monasteries and elsewhere to engage in, with a variety of different mantras to be recited and self-initiations and recitation of sutras such as the Heart Sutra. So we're not going to do all of those. But perhaps tonight, if in addition to the puja on Sunday, we can recite together some Mani mantras or Mani Pemi Hum mantras for His Holiness. I think great benefit may come from this, because His Holiness is a teacher to most of us here, and certainly likely to be at very least an inspiration for everyone here. So with a motivation that His Holiness, with the motivation to create the causes for His Holiness to continue to remain physically present in our world, and to remain physically present in the world, in particular, to continue His vast deeds that are of great benefit to sentient beings, we recite these mantras. We recite these mantras with the conviction that through His Holiness's activities, great benefit comes to beings through Him teaching them the methods and the techniques to attain liberation from suffering, to become free of suffering, to attain freedom. So therefore, with the motivation of wanting to benefit all sentient beings, we recite the Om Mani Mantra together so as to create the causes for His Holiness to continue to remain physically in our world.